On this episode of What's Going On with Shipping, is China building barges to invade Taiwan? I'm your host, Sal Mercogliano. Welcome to today's episode. So there has been a lot of talk for months leading up to this, but we finally have imagery of these craft being used off the coast of China. And there is a lot of conjecture that these craft are designed to assist China should they decide to invade Taiwan. However, I've seen a lot of things that are comparing these to the World War II Mulberry ports built by the British and the Americans for use during the D-Day invasion of Normandy. What I want to do is take a look at these barges, see how they can be used in a modern joint logistics over the shore, JLOTS operation, and what we know and what we don't know about them. If you're new to the channel, hey, take a moment, subscribe to the channel, and hit the bell so be alerted about new videos as they come out. First, I need to give props to two people in particular who have been following this story absolutely religiously, and they need to be given all the credit. First is H.I. Sutton, good friend of the show. He has a site, Covert Shores. He's done two videos on it. I'll have them both linked above there so you can go to them. First one was 2 months ago, where he's talking about the Chinese invasion barges and their leading indicator of plans for Taiwan. And then a new video, very quick one he did, on the first sighting of the Chinese invasion barges. Second is Tom Shugart. This is his ex-Twitter page. You can follow him. He has been great. I'm going to be using images from both of them in this story. Again, all credit to H.I. Sutton and Tom Shugart. They have been doing yeoman work in studying these issues. So this is an image that came out, and it shows the three different types of vessels. And I'm going to use Tom Shugart's classification of these vessels. You can see the vessels off the beach. Now, these are what's known as jack-up vessels. They have these large posts. Four of them are on the vessel on the left, six of them on the middle vessel, and eight of them on the vessel on the right. These vessels will lower those jack-up rigs. They actually touch the bottom, and then the ships will actually lift themselves up on the rigs. It's like a big jack, hence the jack in the jack-up rig. They'll be able to lift themselves up. And as you see here, the ships are completely up and out of the water. What's unique about this is on the bow of all three of these vessels, they have this extended crane or ramp system that allows you to bridge the vessels together. This is giving you a distance here of estimated about 180 meters. We're talking about over 500-600 feet out from the beach. These vessels extend. And what you have here is a bridge. You can basically attach to the back end of this right vessel or come alongside these vessels with their side ramps and hook into them and then drive the entire length of this process down and onto the beach. Now, I want to be clear about something. These are not designed to be amphibious assault vessels. You are not going to storm up to, you know, Omaha Beach with these vessels. That's not what they're designed to do. They're designed to come in behind an amphibious operation, but before a port is opened up. And I'm going to put you into context here with that in a second. All right, let's go to the World War II analogy that keeps getting thrown out here, and that is of the World War II Mulberry ports. This is probably one of the most famous images we have of a World War II Mulberry port. These are the ports that were created off the coast of the British and American beaches in Normandy in June and July of 1944. A couple of things make up a Mulberry port. Number one, you have to create a breakwater. And so one of the things that they would do is sink vessels. In this case, you'll see a batch of Liberty ships here at mooring. But outside of that, you'll see these caissons. And these were basically large concrete blocks they sent out, and then they sunk them into the ocean. And what this does is it creates a secluded kind of harbor so that if it gets rough in the channel, which it does in the English Channel, this will provide a breakwater, and you would steam in here through the entrance. Liberty ships can tie up at these moorings, and then small craft can come out and shuttle the cargo from the anchorage where the vessels are at to shore. And then you had these large piers that were created. So you would create these piered roadways out to these wharf areas here, or these pier heads, and you can dock vessels up against them. And then that cargo can be loaded directly ashore. You can actually drive it ashore. And then you had places where you can bring your amphibious craft in, tank landing ships, tank landing craft, you name it. You could bring in landing ship tanks, all the different variety of methods. And this was designed for throughput. This was designed for the period after Tom Hanks lands in Saving Private Ryan until you open up the major ports, Cherbourg, Antwerp, Marseille, Toulon, all the major ports. You still need ports, but this was seen as an interim. Now, these ports are so good that they became one of the major supplies for the Allied armies for long after it was expected to. That was largely because Antwerp was not opened as early as they thought, and they were not able to open up some of the Atlantic Channel ports because of the German fortifications from them, plus the destruction at Cherbourg and a whole variety of reasons. But this is the World War II analogy. Fast forward to the modern day, we have this image of a Marine Expeditionary Unit, a battalion-sized task force loaded on board three U.S. Navy vessels that make up what's called an amphibious ready group. So you'll have a big deck LHA or LHD, you'll have an LPD, and you'll have an LSD. And a Marine amphibious group is great to land a battalion-sized task force on the beach. What it's not good to do is offload anything else. They can offload these three ships, but that's largely it. LCAC's landing craft air cushion, these are the the hovercraft that the Navy likes to use. They actually have to go into the interior, into the well deck of a ship, come off their cushion, load, and then back on cushion and back out. You can't pull an LCAC alongside a ship. It's like if you ever play air knock hockey, it floats on a cushion of air. That doesn't work that way. You can't do that. And you can't come up alongside a ship when you're blowing air out through the side. What you need are these, the LCUs. These are the motorized barges, basically the modern version of an LCM or an LSM is what you need. But you can pull those along cargo ships, but you need a lot of them. So the Marine Amphibious Group is designed to kind of be your commandos. It's your Marine, your shock troops. Go ashore, seize an area, clear out an area using both amphibious assaults and helicopter, or in this case, V-22s, vertical assault, and you grab your area. These next charts I pulled from a joint publication, Joint Pub 4.01, JLOTS, or Joint Logistics Over the Sea. They are a bit dated. This is, I believe, from 1996 or 1998, and this shows you a JLOTS operation over the beach. You have vessels out at anchor, so in this case, a fast sea lift ship. That would be a roll-on, roll-off type ship, and then a container ship, and then you would bring alongside a crane ship. We have four of these left in the inventory, or however, all of them are really old, almost 60 years old, and most of their cranes are not going to be able to access most modern container ships. But what you see here is that bridge between ships at anchor and the shoreline. And what you need are connectors. Connectors are watercraft, either Navy or Army watercraft. These can be LCU 2000s. They could be LSVs, logistic support vessels. They could be Navy LCUs. They can be lighterage, the barge craft that are carried on board the maritime prepositioning ships. But there's a whole variety of methods. And what you're doing is offloading ships at anchor and ashore. The problem with that is throughput. You cannot move cargo very quickly in this manner. You load your connector. That connector goes to the shore. It offloads and it comes back out. So there's always an intermediary between the vessel offshore and the beach. It's just a very slow process. Eventually, what you need to do is open up a port. Once you open the port, you can bring vessels directly in and begin to offload them. Again, this is an old chart. It's showing types of ships that don't even exist anymore. But once you open the port, you can then increase your throughput. What the Chinese are doing here is trying to bridge between those two areas with the vessels offshore and the opening of the port. So they're coming up with that intermediate stage, the point from the amphibious assault to when you have the port open. Now, we had a recent example of joint logistics over the shore. It just wasn't a great one. And that was the Gaza Pier. Now, I did a whole slew of videos on the Gaza Pier. You can see them up above if you want to see them. But the concept of the Gaza Pier, first off, was not a full JLOTS issue. There were a couple of caveats on that operation. Number one, you were not allowed to put boots on the ground in Gaza. That did constrain it. Plus, the other issue was you were bringing trucks out from the shore out to the platform to load them and then bringing them back. This was not a very smooth operation. But it was also taking place in an open roadstead. There was no protected harvest. So unlike the mulberries that had those caissons that were sunk down, this platform, this J-LOT's platform, was exposed to the sea state. And what we saw was the sea state played havoc on it. We saw that sea state three, which is what this is rated for, roughly about 4 to 5 foot swells, will knock this system apart. And that is exactly what happened off the coast of Gaza. So the Chinese are masters at studying past issues, and they have studied examples of the United States doing amphibious and over-the-shore logistics extensively. And what we've seen them doing is mastering how to do that. So here's an example of a Chinese amphibious exercise with civilian shipping. This comes from Covert Shores. This is August 31st, 2022. A couple of things to note here. Here you have a commercial vessel at anchor, and then here you have a civilian ferry. It has a helipad on board with stern ramps. And what you see is armored vehicles coming off the ferry. They're actually driving around. You can see them kind of blown up here. They're heading out over to the merchant ship. They can come alongside, they can load, and then they're heading ashore to the beach. So it's important to note that when the Chinese build commercial craft, especially for themselves, they're going to be flagged in China and operate in China, they build them to a much higher standard, a military standard. So for example, here is a Chinese ferry that's being built. What makes the Chinese ferry very unique is that it has provisions for a helipad on it. It has strengthened decks, meaning that they're not just designed to carry cars, but they're designed to carry tanks and armored personnel carriers and all the military equipment associated with them. Which means that the Chinese commercial fleet has a military role to them. Now, the Navy War College has extensively looked at this. They have an entire series on Chinese reports, what they call the Chinese Maritime Reports. And if you look at them, number 25 in particular looks at Chinese fairy tales, the Chinese use of civilian shipping in military activities. There's a series of these. And again, I'll have a link over to this entire series over at the Navy War College. All right, that takes us over to the new barges. Now, this is an image again by H.I. Sutton over at Covert Shores showing what he believed to be the operation of one of these jackup rigs that they're building, these landing barges, and how they would marry up with the ferry. So what we've seen is something a little bit different than what is portrayed in this imagery. So why does China need this in the first place? This is marine traffic. Marine traffic has a nautical chart feature, and I've erased ships from here. Here is the coast of China. This is Taiwan. And the distance between the coast of China and Taiwan is not far. It's about a little bit over 100 miles, depending on where you're at this. So this is a very close invasion. It's actually akin to the D-Day landing going from England to the Normandy coast. Actually, it's more actually closer to the coast around Le Havre. So it's a little bit closer. But if the Chinese were to do an amphibious assault into Taiwan, obviously the west coast of Taiwan would be their objective. And now when you look at the west coast, I'm just going to zoom into an area here so that we can see it. Here are some of the heavily urbanized areas here with ports and everything. But if you go up a little bit further north here, up along the northwest coast of Taiwan, you'll see that all along the beach here, you have this very shallow water. This is in depths in meters. So you have a very shallow draft here that exists. If you look at the scale here, our scale right now at this is about 200 meters. So this is roughly about 200 meters here. So to get out to 800 meters, to get yourself out into deeper water, you would need to create a bridge of ships to get you out into 3, 4 meters of water. You're going to need to bridge yourself off the coast. And as you go up along the Taiwanese coast, you see that kind of exists through this whole area, this little band of very shallow water that exists along the coast. And then you see these ports that are intermingled here in the area. So if you're the Chinese and you want to conduct this landing on Taiwan, you can use your amphibious forces. China has an amphibious force. They're building ships akin to our maritime and amphibious ready groups. They have about 4 big deck helicopter ships. They have 8 to 12 of the larger platform vessels, the LPD, LSDs, along with a fleet of much smaller craft so that the Chinese can stage it. The problem's going to be until they can seize one of these ports along the west coast of Taiwan to bring in their follow-on. And that's where these barges, these invasion barges, play a role. So these images come from Tom Sugar, and Tom has been absolutely fantastic in using commercial satellite technology to monitor Chinese shipbuilding. It has been fantastic to follow him and watch. You really need to follow him. Just an amazing amount of information comes out. This image alone captures seven of those landing type barges, and Tom characterizes them down into three types. The first one here, the type two, he calls them LPTs, kind of landing platforms. This is the first type, what he calls the type two. And he makes a couple of key notes here. Number one, you will see that they have a pilot house and bridge up forward, meaning they're not really barges, but they're self-propelled. So they're actually ships. They have four legs to stand on. The legs are estimated about 25 meter pilings here. And then this long ramp, this is the ramp that will extend out over the bow of the vessel here. Now, what's interesting about LPT-2 is it's very wide. It has a wide platform in here. And I think that has to do with the fact that this is going to be the module that's closest to the beach. It's the one that's going to put its ramp down on the beach. And you need bulldozers and road grading equipment because you just can't put your ramp down on the beach and expect to start offloading trucks and tanks. They're going to get bogged down in the beach. Lots of times when you do a JLOTS over the shore, joint logistics over the shore, you have to prepare the beach. You have to pack the sand, move material to create an off-ramp off the ramp, off the ramp of the lead vessel. So what I would imagine on LPT number two here, type two, they would have bulldozers, road grading equipment, and other vehicles that would have to be the first off the vessel to help prepare the ramp so that when follow-on equipment come off, they're ready to move on. Next, you have what he calls LPT-1, and this is the intermediate unit. This is the unit that comes in right behind LPT-2, and the reason you can tell this, number one, is it has six of these legs. These are 50-meter pilings, so these are much taller pilings. These are meant to get you out into deeper water and create that bridge. Again, you have a pilot house and bridge. You have a radar on board. Here you have that crane or that lattice rig here so that you can pull this whole ramp down on it. And then what's interesting is on the port and starboard side and on the stern, you have transfer ramps. You have ramps that you can lower down so that you can bring ships alongside or marry up to another vessel from behind. So this unit is actually the intermediate unit that will bridge with those ferries or commercial vessels that would be coming in. And then finally, this is LPT-3, a much larger vessel. Here we see eight jackup pilings. Both they're measured at about 50 meters, so about the same size as we saw on LPT-1. Again, radar and pilot house bridge up forward. Interesting to note, this has an extremely large stern ramp to come down. This is going to be designed so that the ferries can come directly in line with it, drop their bow ramps, or come stern to stern with them and drop their stern ramps. But it also has a starboard side roll-on transfer ramp. It doesn't have a port one, and that's an interesting. It's only on the starboard side on LPT-3. So that gets us back to that initial image, and I want to show you just a couple of things that I noted that I haven't seen mentioned. So you'll see the three types here. Here's that type two, that the very smaller one. It's not small in terms of size. It's a big ship, but a couple of things that you note. Number one, it's got those four legs on it, so it's the least amount of legs. Also, the shortest legs, we know they're about 25 meters. Notice here the boot topping, the difference in color between the bottom of the ship versus the top of the ship. Very shallow draft. This is designed to get as close into the beach as they can. They have as small a draft as possible on this vessel, especially when you compare it to the Type 1 and the Type 2. Much deeper in the water are the Type 1's Type 2. The other thing I noticed here, you do not have, for example, the fenders. You see these black kind of little balls here on the side. Those are mooring fenders. This is so you can bring ships up alongside. You don't have them in Type 2. You're not designed this vessel to bring ships alongside because you're literally in the surf. The other thing I did not notice in this image or the other one I showed you at the very beginning, I don't see a rudder or a propeller on this ship, which tells me that this vessel probably has jet drive. It's probably sucking water up and has jet drives coming out the back. And the reason you like jet drives is because you can get in really, really shallow water with a jet drive. And you can move this in. You can literally beach this vessel, come in full bore, beach this vessel, lift it up on its legs, and now you have that bridge across. And in this case, if the water was too shallow to get a type one in, you can bring in another type two. And remember, as I said, you extend this ramp out into the beach area. You can offload your tractors, your beach gradient, your road developing areas, so that you can make your access off the beach onto the highway and the road system that exists in Taiwan. Because what this is going to do for you is create a land bridge. Let's keep going down and we'll talk about the land bridge here in a second. Type one, six pilings. Again, 50 meter pilings. Notice how much higher these pilings are versus the pilings off type two. That indicates that the type two pilings are much shorter. So here you have the pilings. The vessel is completely up and out of the water. It is dried. It's like an elevated causeway system. This ship is up out of the water. You can barely, and I did a very big zoom in on this, notice a rudder and potentially propellers on these. So I think they have propellers, maybe shrouded propellers, but they do have propellers on them. This Type 1 has the ability to bring ships alongside both the port and starboard side. You can see the ramps here. Notice that there's no port side ramp on the Type 3. So you can bring in vessels. You would have to have deep enough water to bring them in. You would probably also need tugs of some kind to assist so that the vessels that are brought in don't broach into the surf here. And then your Type 3 is an even bigger platform further out. It is larger so that you can bring ships in, tie them up alongside, and then offload them. And again, you have that massive stern ramp here off the Type 3. And the reason this system is different than this system, this is the U.S. intermediate system. This system requires you to offload into connectors and then drive them ashore, offload them, then bring it back. So you're always stopping and going. In this system, you are marrying your ship to this network and you're driving your vehicles off as fast as you can. If it can take you an hour and offload an entire vessel. If you look at how fast car carriers are offloaded in ports, most car carriers, depending on personnel, you need to get drivers. You're always cycling drivers, but you can offload car carriers in just a few hours. If you have a military vessel, a ferry with tanks, armored personnel carriers, logistics trucks, air defense elements, you can get them off. So you can offload vessels very fast, which means that the window to knock this out is very small, which is another problem. A lot of people are looking at that and saying, oh, we can knock that out with a ship sink, laser-guided missile with tomahawks, with all these elements. Understand, you can't sink these things. They're up on the jacks. They're up out of the water. So you're going to have to physically destroy the system to knock it out. Plus, you're not going to have just one of these. We talked about Tom photographed seven different types of these. So they can have multiple of these. They could have potentially up to two, if not three of them. Plus, they can extend out even longer. Plus, they're modular. Once they offload a few vessels, they can, raise their legs up, pull back out, and then establish them somewhere else. They may not be in the same spot the next day or later on. So even if you get a satellite image of them, no telling how long they're going to be there. This is a very fast system. It is much different than the World War II Mulberry system, which took days to set up. I mean, this was a long, intensive days to set up. You had to drag the mulberries and the caissons and all the vessels across. This took a long time. That system designed by the Chinese will take a very short period of time to get set up. I don't have any commercial reason why the Chinese would put a system like that in place. There really isn't a commercial application to do that unless you're talking about going to islands that you want to develop that don't have pier facilities. That's the only other reason. Now, will they use it against Taiwan? I don't know. They may use it against some other islands out in the area, maybe in the South China Sea, maybe some islands that Taiwan has that are off the coast of China, maybe some islands that China has disputes with Japan. There's no telling. It's definitely going to be used against Taiwan. However, that is an interesting logistics setup that the Chinese have set up. They're going to be able to move a lot of cargo very quickly onto the beach. And the word here is throughput. You have to get throughput. Marine expeditionary units don't give you a lot of throughput. You can offload that marine battalion, but you don't have a lot of throughput to offload commercial vessels. And we, the United States, have gutted our ability to do this. We've gotten rid of the maritime prepositioning ships. The Marine Corps squadrons are basically all gone. The Army has removed their afloat prepositioning force, and particularly their port opening packages. Army watercraft are in shambles. They had a bad showing, obviously, with the Gaza Pier. It is in not good shape. But meanwhile, the Chinese are showing how to do it. Now, will it be effective? I don't know. But it's something that needs to be planned. If we were thinking that it's going to take China so long to build up on Taiwan because they have to open up a port, this tells you they don't need to open up a port. They can bridge that until they can get the port and they can bring in a lot of equipment very quickly. They can expand their lodgment from just a beachhead into a major, major holding. And this can be done in Taiwan. It could be done on small islands. It could be done almost anywhere. That is an interesting development, and it just piques my interest as someone who has studied both civilian and military logistics. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, hey, take a moment, subscribe to the channel, and hit the bell to be alerted about new videos as they come out. Leave a comment, share it across social media, and if you can, support the page. How do you do that? You can hit the super thanks button down below or head on over to Patreon and become a monthly, yearly subscriber. Until the next episode, this is Al, signing off.